Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
You ever get frustrated that you can't watch certain live sports events because they aren't televised or available in your country, like this country, the United States?
Absolutely. I think we've even talked about that a few times on the air before. Luckily, with our friends at NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country that is showing the sporting event you want to watch, so you don't miss out and you can catch all the action live.
Now, you know I've had a lot of problems with my internet providers over the years doing this show. That's why it's called the Big Audio Nightmare. So I've heard that VPNs are like great for online protection, but I'm already having trouble with my internet speed.
Yeah, good news here though. NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world. I don't even notice it running, so I can stream and game online with no buffering or lagging. Even more than that, NordVPN prevents my internet service provider from throttling my bandwidth, like it sounds like they were doing to you, Mike. So I have a consistently reliable internet connection, and I think they'll do the same for everyone listening.
I heard it's the price of a cup of coffee every month, and you know how much I love my coffee, so that's a small price to pay for premium cybersecurity and access to a vast amount of entertaining content from all over the world.
Absolutely. I think what people can do right now, they can grab their exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/f4w to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and 4 months for free.
No better price than that. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee.
Again, that's nordvpn.com/f4w to get your discount and 4 months for free.
Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Feels like deja vu all over again.
It certainly does. It certainly does. We are here for the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. We are big time, if you just heard that. We got our friends at NordVPN backing us up, backing up the entire F4W online network. We're not here just to talk about that, even though we are here to tell you about that. We're here to talk about everything that's going on in the world of Japanese professional wrestling. And as always, I always like to point out, unlike what some people said here many years ago on this website, there is in fact a lot happening in Japan.
Not that we hold on to petty grudges or anything like that, but I know exactly what you mean, and there is a lot going on across the landscape of Japanese professional wrestling, not the least of which is, of course, the worldwide leader of Japanese professional wrestling. It's real hard for me to try to compare New Japan to WWE and try to do it in that sort of speak, but when it comes to the worldwide leader, I guess it's New Japan.
They're the king of
The
sports.
king of sports, exactly, except in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, apparently, where it's much nicer to spend your November days than in Osaka, Japan.
Yeah, talk about some unsurprising, yet frustrating, yet I guess really maybe not all that frustrating news coming out of the world of New Japan and WWE, where for everyone that said, oh, yeah, WWE is going to let Karl Anderson go to Osaka and drop the never open weight title. It's a new day, I've been told, with Paul running things. Well, WWE announced the Good Brothers were going to be on Crown Jewel November 5th, which just happens to be the same day as New Japan's show in Osaka, as you mentioned, where Karl Anderson was scheduled to defend, and one would think drop the said never open weight title to Hikuleo. Well, he's going to Saudi Arabia instead. There's a promo that came out today. It's hard to tell how much of that promo was them setting something up or it was just them being them. I don't know. I guess if Karl Anderson is going to drop the title to Hikuleo, could you maybe do it at one of the shows coming up in New York City next week? Maybe even have that be one of the surprise matches on Thursday on the October 27th show. I don't know. I think it's probably more likely the belt just goes back to New Japan without him dropping it, but I guess we're all feigning shock today.
I was a little surprised, and I'll tell you why. Because it's Haku's son, and I just if Uncle Paul wanted to be the really cool uncle, it's like, well, okay, here's a chance to do it. You don't really lose anything with Karl Anderson going up, because again, in WWE's universe, who cares? No, they haven't seen the Never title anybody that actually cares about this sort of thing, they're going to have their opinion regardless. In the world of WWE, it doesn't matter. Most of those people either don't care, they won't hear about it, they'll hear about it and just shake it off like, oh, wow, look, that's cool. That's it. So that's why I figured, okay, there's a possibility that this thing could happen. And obviously, it doesn't look like it's going to take place that way, because I don't think it's possible for you to get to from Osaka to Saudi Arabia. I don't know.
Don't tell Hulk Hogan that.
You know, it takes 7 days to get from Riyadh to Osaka. So I have no idea if that's even like was possible. But obviously now that's not going to happen. So give the belt back, like preferably on one of those New York shows as the surprise. I doubt they're going to do that. I've reached out to a couple of people inside New Japan. I expected no response. I have gotten no response. I'm sure when I do get a response, it'll be either a text or an email or a DM with a little finger pointing to whatever New Japan officially has to say about this. And to be honest with you, I don't think that's probably going to happen before the end of the week at the very least. So we'll see. This is, what can you say? You know, if anybody stuck their neck out there for Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows, I feel bad for them because, you know, it's just the situation. But, you know, it's too bad it had to go down like this. And it's just another sign that, you know, much like AEW, that's a separate story, but like feigning shock that they would screw AEW over in any way. I mean, look, WWE's WWE, whether Vince McMahon's running it or Paul Levesque's running it, they have their own interests in mind first and foremost, and to hell with everybody else, especially your wrestling fantasies. So, you know, Carl Anderson, the only thing with him and Doc Gallows is, you know, you said you weren't going back to Saudi Arabia. You had all that drama and fallout that happened with all of that sort of stuff that was made public, that was put out there. And, you know, I just kind of throw my hands up. If that's the decision that you want to make, that's great. We don't have to worry about you now here anymore talking about New Japan Wrestling. Now it's just a matter of what are they going to do with that title? You know, what's going to happen with Hikuleo? And that's pretty much that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, WWE is WWE. Anyone who deludes themselves into thinking otherwise, you know, do so at your own risk. The Good Brothers are the Good Brothers. Believe they're going to be different at your own risk. It's easy to be frustrated with WWE, and I'm always happy to do that. I'm not a fan of the company. I think anyone who's listened to this podcast for any period of time knows that. But really, the people that you should be frustrated with if you're a New Japan fan are New Japan. Like, you can't tell me that New Japan couldn't have or shouldn't have seen this coming, putting the title on a guy they don't have under contract, guys that will clearly go for the money at any given time, which whatever, that's fine. Make your money. But guys that also add next to nothing to the actual product. Buyer beware in New Japan apparently was not aware enough to be aware as they should have been. And so they got what they got. You know, I don't think too many people are going to miss seeing Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, Doc Gallows in New Japan. I guess good for him. He got his win over Tanahashi. That certainly looks even less good now after the fact. I think the other aspect of this, they won't do it, but the other aspect of this that would really be perfect given the conversation that we had on last week's show, now is the time to just seal the damn title.
Yeah, I would be fine with that. If it disappeared, this would be a great way for it to go out, and you can put Hikuleo in a TV title feud or whatever. Again, there's a zillion and one things you can do that don't have to revolve around titles and professional wrestling, and that could be done. Yeah, it's just
Well, you mentioned the TV title. I mean, that kind of plays into everything else that we're going to be talking on in the early part of the show, because what we saw from the TV title here over the past week or so, as much as, you know, we talked about the unnecessary nature of the belt, everything I saw for the most part from that tournament this week only makes it more Like, it's more of a compelling reason to just get rid of the never title, because this TV title actually has a rule set that makes it unique and interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, we see it with AEW and having all the titles there. It's nice in certain ways to have a CMLL title, a New Japan title, an ROH title, a Rev Pro title defended on your show. But when you have too many, they don't mean anything anymore. And the Never name, as we talked about last week, was something that came from Masato Tanaka. It was something that came in from 01, and it was going to be, look, long story short, it's unneeded. The IWGP World Six-Man Tag Team titles sounds fine. You know, losing the Never title as you introduce this TV title, which is unique and different, that is not going to feature a lot of veterans or older wrestlers or slower wrestlers or whatever. They can compete for the IWGP title, the US title, the tag, which again, tag titles in two divisions that need to be rebuilt back up, which they are in theory trying to do right now, especially with like FTR and Aussie Open and Cobb and O'Conn and those types of teams. And that's where I thought, obviously, this would be hoping against hope that Anderson and Gallows could be somewhat beneficial, because they can take some L's along the line to these other teams to build them up a little bit. I know that probably would be asking way, way too much, but that at least was in some of my fantasy land. Now you don't have to worry about that. So you can concentrate on these other teams. You can concentrate on all of these other foreigners that you're going to have at your disposal here, you know, really beginning now, but going through the beginning of the year, including at the Tokyo Dome, which is only one day. There's only so many spots. So, you know, them being out is definitely going to be somebody's gain.
Yeah, really, when you think about it, to me, a team or a group that you could say would be maybe stand most to gain would be a group like TMDK, particularly.
Yes.
I mean, is there anyone who wouldn't rather see Bad Dude Tito and Shane Haste teaming up in New Japan going against some of the teams you mentioned than what the Good Brothers are at this point? It's completely unnecessary. I will not be shedding a tear if they're gone, which it certainly sounds like they are. And yeah, we all move on. And like we said, the TV title, as much as we talked about last week that it was unnecessary, watching these matches, particularly the second night at Korakuen, outside of the evil match, but the second night of Cork and the main event, and then the two matches in Nagaoka, like they've got something here. You could even throw in the Finlay Kanemaru match. I don't know what you thought of ZSJ and Alex Zane. I thought the finish of that was kind of lame. But we had some real urgency, particularly with the match on the 16th between Sonata and Taichi, with Toshiaki Kawada in the corner, or excuse me, in ringside doing commentary. Like, this was different from a Sonata Taichi match you'd see otherwise. Once they got done with the push-ups and the pec popping, this was, as silly as it sounds to say, almost like a high-speed match in Stardom in terms of what they were breaking out, the pace, the urgency. It's good stuff.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking so much recently because of the tournament that was taking place with Stardom, where the 20-minute time limits. And we both come from a time where they had the NWA World Television Championship, and there was a 10-minute time limit, then it was a 15-minute time limit, then a 20-minute time limit, and then they could vary it from there depending on the feud, but you were able to use that as part of the feud. So it works in two ways, because obviously you can build storylines out of this if you have a... Look, let's just say, because he would be my favorite to do it, that Ren Narita wins this thing. You know, let's say he does, or let's say, you know what? Let's say he loses to, oh, I don't know. Let's say it's Zack Sabre Jr., right? Because I don't want to put evil in there. But so let's say it's Zack Sabre Jr. You know, you do a thing where he's trying to go after this title. He made it to the finals. He was so close, and now he's got to face Zack, and he's only got X amount of time. And you do the stall, you do this. There's so many things you can do if people are into it to continue it on based off of that time limit. So it works well that way. Plus, you have a bunch of fans who are now already conditioned. If they do watch Stardom and they do watch matches that are kind of in the vein of this where with time limits where, you know, that actually matters now as far as how these people wrestle. And you know, there were a couple of matches that I think really stand out. And I think Zane and Zack Sabre, that really wasn't one of them. And I think that was on the, you know, the lower end of the scale of some of these matches. But as time went on, you know, Kenta and Goto, I thought, was okay. But Sonata and Taichi and Yoshihashi and Jeff Cobb, I thought, made the best use of the time limit for sure. And Sonata and Taichi took it to a different level. But I thought both of those matches were great examples of what you can do in a limited time frame and still have it make sense, have it work, and have, again, have that shadow of the time limit, again, over the match that the fans know that they have to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. The both matches really, I mean, Yoshihashi and Jeff Cobb, I mean, Jeff Cobb is in some ways like the Yoshihashi whisperer, and I don't know that that's even fair necessarily, because we've seen Yoshihashi have very good matches with several people, but he always seems even better in there with Jeff Cobb. They went 12-14, and Yoshihashi was able to actually get the win on Jeff Cobb, kind of, I don't know, in some ways, making up for the fact that he didn't get the win in that match in the New Japan Cup, where, you know, we had talked about at the time that that felt like a moment where Yoshihashi needed to win and didn't. He gets the win here. And then you mentioned the Taichi and Sonata match where that was at a different level. I mean, that was a great sub 15 minute match, just under the 15 minute time limit. The other thing about, you talked about these matches, kind of equating it to what you see in Stardom, 15 minutes in the five-star Grand Prix. When you have the shorter time limit, you can do big matches with this short time limit. And in some ways, that still saves that same match down the line as not being spoiled or not being losing any freshness as you go forward. Plus, you've got the whole idea of, at least in the tournament, if you go 15 minutes, it's a coin flip thing, which, it's kind of weird. It's kind of a cop-out. But what it also does is, if you want to have someone advance in the tournament, but you really feel like you can't beat their opponent, then you can go to the time limit draw, do the coin toss. Like, I fully expect at some point that's going to happen with Zack Sabre Jr. here. He's going to go to a 15-minute draw, particularly since they teased it, him getting the submission over Alex Zane in, you know, just 5 seconds before the time limit expired. But Sabre going to a time limit draw, maybe it's with David Finlay in the second round, and then Finlay wins the coin toss, and Sabre throws a classic tantrum outside, you know, and then he's got a built-in title challenge coming up.
Or look at how Finlay is attired now. I'm not saying that he had, because again, some of it is, you know, juice-esque with the staff and all that stuff, but it's like, I could see him and Alex Zane teaming up, you know, yeah. I could see them putting them together. And it's like, if you do a scenario like that, then you have something built in for Zack Sabre Jr. and Taichi to do. Again, depending on, again, we'll get to this a little bit later on, depending on what you want to do with Taichi and what his plans are going to be with Kawada, which was quite interesting there with the face-to-face yes. afterwards. But yeah, I mean, you could do that. I'm not necessarily a proponent of that, but you absolutely can, as long as you have a plan that comes out of it.
100%. And we'll see. I mean, you could say that they usually do have a plan. It feels like that's gone a little bit sideways over the past year or so. But yeah, particularly the what you mentioned with Taichi and Sonata and then Toshiaki Kawada, who I imagine most people listening know this, the mentor, the tough love mentor of Taichi many, many years ago in All Japan. Was at ringside doing commentary, and Taichi flat out challenged him to a match. He said, get into shape so we can fight. I still think, you know, just looking at Kawada, that doesn't seem overly likely, but this has been a long-term thing with Taichi. Even you pull in Zack Sabre Jr. as well. How long has it been since they first threw out the challenge to Kawada and Tawe? The Holy Demon Army felt like several years ago. That definitely isn't going to happen with Tawe, but who knows? It's 2022 going into 2023 in wrestling in New Japan, so it could happen. I did also just want to briefly circle back, Mike, to Zack Sabre Jr. and Alex Zane. I mentioned the finish. Like, I thought the match was really good, but the finish of Zane getting locked into to that heel hook and then, like, immediately tapping when there's only 5 seconds left. I get what they were going for, but it just made Zane look kind of weak and ridiculous. which, you know, I don't necessarily think they need to be doing considering how over he is. To me, it felt like if he had been locked in that heel hook for 15, 20 seconds longer and then tapped out right as the bell is going to ring, that would be one thing. But it just felt like a really, really quick tap out. And I know it's a heel hook, but this is wrestling, not MMA. It didn't quite land for me.
I agree with that 100%. And because the Finley Kanemaru match ended very clearly with Finley getting the victory with the Trash Panda, that was, I thought, a good way to try to do things with Zayn and Sabre, because, you know, how they built it up with him going off the ropes and Zach tripping him up and then starting to work on the ankle and starting to work on the leg, that whole setup to get there was good. But like you mentioned, it just wasn't, there was not enough of a struggle. In my opinion, it was not locked on long enough. And because of the way the time was, to me, you did need like Zayn, you know, in tears. I mean, look, if Shingo can be in tears because the goddamn trophy broke again, you know, essentially Zayn could be basically like that with the Submission Master. So I agree with you 100% on that. The build up to it was good. It's just when it got to the end, it was like, I see what you were going for, but it didn't hit for me.
Yeah. They quite literally ran out of time to tell the story as effectively as they could have. As far as New Japan and upcoming shows, the next televised show in Aomori on the 23rd, pretty nothing card outside of the main event, which, you know, depending on what you think, this is fairly nothing as well, is Never Open Weight 6-man tag team titles, Evil, Yujiro, and Sho. 2/3 of that team, by the way, Yujiro and Sho, are going to be in New York City next week. I'll be interested to see what the crowd reaction is for the first time to the House of Torture in the U.S. and if they wrestle quite that absurdly over-the-top, crappy American style, or if they scale it back a little bit. But the House of Torture trio here on the 23rd will defend against Roshi Tanahashi, Hikuleo, and Ryusuke Taguchi. I don't know. This is another one of those shows where the opening match involving a young lion is the match I'm most interested in. That's usually not a good sign. It's Doki versus Kosei Fujita.
I'm taking Fujita. So I got the little New Japan card game gimmick. I do my predictions, and I'm going to get plus 300 for this if he wins, I think. So I'm taking Fujita in this. I could see Doki winning, obviously, but at least I'm going with the hope that Fujita gets a victory here, because, again, Doki loses nothing. It'll probably be a really good basic match, and why not? That would be what I would say, but it may not be time yet.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. They're just so conservative when it comes to doing anything with young lions that have not come back from excursion that I would not expect it, but I certainly would not be upset. I think we've talked about it before. It would be nice if at some point we would have something with a young lion that sort of steps out a little bit from the norm, strap the rocket to someone a little bit. We'll see if that ever happens. We then go from there back-to-back nights at Korakuen Hall. Not crazy cards. I mean, really, you've got the final two first round matches on the 26th. You've got Naito, Bushi, and Titan against Jeff Cobb, TJP, and Francesco Akira. That should be very good. And then we have the final two first round matches, Toru Yano against the Great Okan, which feels much more like a KOPW match than a TV title tournament match. And then the main event, which has been built so well throughout this tour, the brawls during and after every time they've been opposite each other in tag team matches. It is Ren Narita and Tomohiro Ishii. My expectations for this are very, very high. It might be visions of past Shibata Ishii matches dancing in my head, but I think also what we've seen between these two guys, this should be great. I really, really, really hope that we see Narita get the win here, and it's not like he loses to Ishii and then you got 6 months of him trying to get his first big singles win. Have him beat Ishii and have him go far in this tournament.
I agree. I think he should go to the finals. I think when you look at it, you know, who does he defeat? he's going to defeat Okan probably next, or Yano. I mean, you know, if Yano gets the victory over Okan, then that gives, you know, again, you can make even an easier case for Narita to advance. So I think he should at least go to the finals, if not win. Plus, the one thing you have coming up on the 23rd is the ability for Ishii to put Narita into the mat one more time, because you have that six-man match with Ishii and Yoshihashi and Goto against Finley, Tiger Mask, and Narita. So, you know, you can give all of the doubt in the world in the people's minds by having Ishii cleanly pin Narita, have him look a little bit out of his league, you know, or something like that, and then he really does have to rally back on the 26th, and you have a talking point going into it there. I may be just like you. I think I may be hoping a little bit too much against hope, because, you know, if Ishii wins, you know, you, again, there's a lot of different ways you can play this thing, because I think people would be really happy to have Ishii matches for free on New Japan World and streaming everywhere else that these matches are going to be. But I just don't think, to me, we're talking about The Rock, and we talked about, I don't, have we done a show since Kitamura? I think we have, right? We did mention him?
Yes, we did.
Okay, yeah, so that's right. So, you know, that was the last guy with The Rocket, and now you have Shota Umino, who's at a little bit of a different level buzz-wise, whether they care about that or not in management or not, to a lot of fans because of the association with Moxley and because he's been gone for so long. The only time people have seen Narita was during the match with Shibata last year at the Dome. Other than that, it's been 3 years. It's time. You make him the second coming. He's the son of Strong Style. God damn, if not now, with him, at least to some level, who the hell else do you do it with? To me, those are the two guys, and you got one guy right there right now.
Well, yeah, and it's not like, I guess it shows how conservative New Japan's booking is, that we're pleading for them to do something crazy and give Ren Narita the TV title.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like we're saying have him storm the gates after Okada beats Jay White at Wrestle Kingdom and challenge him, and then we have a Narita shock in February. You know, I don't think anyone thinks something like that is going to happen, but this would be the perfect spot for him. So we'll see if it happens. The following night, Corkin Hall, the 27th, David Finlay against Zack Sabre Jr., should be very, very good. We just talked about that a little bit earlier. Evil versus Yoshihashi. I am of the opinion that whoever wins this Evil versus Yoshihashi match is coming out of that side of the bracket, going to the final.
I tend to agree with you. And it screams evil to me, which then screams some horror in my mind about an evil Narita final, and then Narita being involved in a feud with House of Torture. But if I try to put any, if that's the direction they go, the silver lining I'm going to put on that is, who are you giving to Narita to then go through House of Torture that leads to a match at the Dome? Because that's the only way I want to see them tied up with each other. I don't, again, and I know somebody's got to wrestle, you know, the House of Torture. Somebody's got to wrestle the Bullet Club. And at some point, it's probably going to be Narita. But unless, again, you bring him in as the king, you know, the son of Strong Style, I want to see him take those Shibata ethics and kick the shit out of people in House of Torture. And I want him to have some people around him that will do that. Whether that's Tom Lawler or people from the New Japan Strong side, I don't know who it is.
Other LA Dojo guys?
Yeah,
maybe,
I mean,
Flair Connor's in the mix with them?
Yes, Coughlin, yes. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, again, maybe not Coughlin, I guess he's...
Did you just announce Coughlin's return again?
No, I did not. No, I did not, but hopefully Carl Frederick sticks around. You know, we'll see how that goes and everything. So, yes, that, to me, that's the only way you can do that. Is it the best feud? Is it what I want to see? No, but as long as... It's more about, again, building some new guys here, which they desperately need to do, you know, and some new flash. You know, that's the way that works for me.
Yeah, yeah, I would tend to agree. Evil is not the guy that I want to see Narita wrestle, but just knowing how story heavy they are, it almost seems hard for me to believe they aren't going to go with Narita, Son of Strong Style versus crappy American style House of Torture Evil.
And it's a bunch of veterans. And that's the thing in my mind, too, that lingers there is if there's any question about, like, him against veteran performers, you know, that's there's enough of them there. Whether that's good or not, you know, we don't think it is.
Well, yeah, the idea that they had said at the outset that this was going to be more of like a young wrestler title, there aren't a whole lot of options for this to be a young wrestler champion in this tournament other than Narita, or I guess you could say maybe throw David Finlay into that mix to an extent as well. That then will take us to the 30th. We have the second round matches, which will be Taichi versus Kenta. And then the winner of Yano versus Okan and the winner of Narita versus Ishii will also wrestle each other in another second round match, which will then take us to Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium, which we touched on a little bit last week. We'll have Master Wato, Taiji Ishimori, Hiromu Takahashi, and Desperado mixed up in pairings to be named in an Incredibles tag match leading into their four-way at the Tokyo Dome, the semifinals for the World TV title tournament. Still on paper, Carl Anderson versus Hikuleo. That does not seem like it's going to happen. Will Ospreay versus Tetsuya Naito, rematch from the G1 for the U.S. heavyweight title. But before we get there, there's also been announcements about what's coming up. Well, nothing about the 27th because that's a mystery show, but some big announcements about what will be on the show, New York City, October 28th, Rumble on 44th Street. And as far as like these New Japan iPay-per-views that are bigger than a strong show, but not as big as a big New Japan show in Japan, it's a fairly intriguing lineup.
I'm trying to pull it up right now. I thought I had it in front of me, but
well, I have it in front of me. So while you're pulling it up, I will mention the announced main event. Kazuchika Okada and Eddie Kingston teaming together, which is awesome, against the Bullet Club duo of Jay White and Juice Robinson. That obviously is one of what I'm sure will be many preview matches leading into Okada and Jay White at the Tokyo Dome. We also have Minoru Suzuki against Clark Connors in Clark Connors' comeback match. That should be very good. You mentioned earlier, Yujiro and Sho, the House of Torture, finally landing on the shores of America, probably hitting the Statue of Liberty with a wrench on their way. They'll take on Rocky Romero and Yo. And then the other match, three-way for the strong open-weight tag team titles. It is Aussie Open defending against DKC and Kevin Knight and the Motor City Machine Guns.
Holy smokes. You know, I don't know what the plan, I haven't seen. They have not announced any tag teams for the tag league, have they? You know, if the Good Brothers were scheduled and the Motor City Machine Guns were not, I'd like to see them placed in there. That would be fantastic. And I'm looking forward to this. We'll talk about Aussie Open and FTR in a little bit. So I'm dying to see them again. The rest of this show, you know, Okada and Kingston, man, you know, Kingston and Jay White at some point is going to be a one-on-one, and who knows, maybe it'll be an AEW, but Okada and Kingston against White and Robinson, you know, even though on paper there's nothing going on there, the match itself ought to be fantastic. Shingo and Phantasmo, I love them.
That's right, yeah, Shingo and Phantasmo with, is the vote still happening or has it been decided between the basically the Texas Deathmatch, last man standing type of rules or the street fight rules?
I think it's a street fight. I could be wrong about that, but I thought they were going to do a street fight. Either way, you know, LP is great. He's such a great troll. And it was the show that had Yoshihashi and Cobb on it is when, you know, once again, he left Shingo crying and challenged him for the match here in New York. With the shit out of the way, with the trophy, those two together are fantastic. I like it. I know this is like Edge and Booker T at WrestleMania. You had to put something on there, so they're fighting over a Japanese shampoo commercial. That's how I look at this King of Pro Wrestling trophy, but at least the match itself is going to be good stuff. And Minoru Suzuki's been barnstorming around, or I guess is on his way to barnstorming around
in
October.
He just started his October tour of the United States. Yeah. Points popular and very obscure all seem to be on the tour.
That's just pay the man, get him an ashtray and a place to lay his cool hats, and he's good to go. And Clark, I look, this is, you know, that's that's obviously all up everybody's wheelhouse that's going to be going to that show, because Clark Connors, you have to be blind to not think he's a future star. So him in there with Suzuki grinding away, doing that, you know, it looks good. How many more matches they're going to add to this? I don't know. There's five there. They got two nights. But, you know, that's a strong start, in my opinion, for essentially, you know, a New York house show.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. One note on Motor City Machine Guns. You mentioned the possibility of them being on the next tour. I would love to see them in the heavyweight tag team tournament, but I would think it would be more likely, knowing the way New Japan does things, that they would be in the concurrent Super Junior Tag League, most likely, I guess, considering those are both taking place at the same time. But we shall see. Either way, definitely hoping we see some outside content, some outsiders on those shows, much like we saw at Royal Quest, particularly with FTR. Maybe the most shocking news of all, Mike, as we record this, is Royal Quest finally got uploaded to New Japan World some 2 weeks after it happened.
I got to be honest. I heard so much as soon as it went up about how bad the production was and all. And look, it was not New Japan level traditional production.
But it's Rev Pro production, literally.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is I've seen so many, you know, with IWTV and you see bad indie shows with terrible announcing, terrible production, all that stuff. I didn't think it was that bad at all. And I like the fact that they inserted the video packages with no echo. It looks like they did them in post-production after the fact and slid those in. So I thought that was good before each match. I didn't have any problem at all with the production. And when it came to the matches, you know, the last two in particular, with FTR and Aussie Open and Ospreay and Umino, again, there was nothing that had to do with any camera work that was going to keep me away from enjoying those matches.
Yeah, the production was, like you said, it wasn't to the level of what you'd see, you know, a TV Asahi New Japan production, but it wasn't distracting. Like, I think back to that, was it the Ospreay Zack Sabre Jr. match in Rev Pro a year or two ago that was incredible, but it was almost impossible to watch. Like, literally almost impossible to watch because the cameras were shaking and bobbling around, and half the time, like, that guy's heads weren't even in the frame. Like, it was just horrendous. This was nowhere near to that level. It was totally fine in terms of watchability. Definitely want to talk about the Ospreay show to Umino match and obviously the tag title match, but I did not want to let it go unsaid that Gabriel Kidd returned on both of these shows. And I thought, particularly in the opening match on night one, he was in a 10-man tag on night two. But the opening match in night one against Dan Maloney, he looked great. And it made me very happy to see him back. Really, really hope that he can kind of keep things going on the right track, that he sort of is taking advantage of all the resources he needs to be in the best place headspace-wise. Because that guy has legit top five in the world potential. He was starting to show it in a major way, whether it be the match with Eddie Kingston, some other things that we saw on Strong before issues cropped up and he disappeared for a while. Really, really, really hoping that we're in for a nice long run of Gabriel Kidd reaching the potential that it looked like he had, because to me, he's right there with Yuya Uemura as like the can't miss main event level guys from an in-ring talent perspective, sort of in the New Japan Young Lions / Excursion system right now.
Absolutely. So really the only thing I can say is the best to him, and I hope everything continues on and he's refreshed and can stay straight and everything is going to work out well. You know what I'm saying? So that's,
definitely.
Again, he's one of those guys with Fredericks and Coughlin and those LA Dojo guys, it's just there's so much talent right there for their future, and you just want to see it continue to grow and, you know, everybody be okay. And now I got to ask you, because I haven't asked you, and I meant to ask you last week too. Gideon Gray, as a cartoon character manager / wrestler for United Empire, he has grown on me greatly, and him bobbing around with the Great Okan, I don't know, that works for me. Are you a fan of Gideon Gray? Because I know some people love him, some people hate him.
I expected to hate this. I have, in fact, Loved it. He is. I don't need 10 Gideon Grays. I don't need two, but he is fantastic. As you say, kind of about other people, he is fantastic at being Gideon Gray. I cannot imagine another human being on Earth pulling off the Gideon Gray character better than he does here now, as sort of the trust fund baby benefactor of the United Empire. I don't mind it at all. He was entertaining on these two shows. So yeah, it's an unexpected hidden gem. Don't mind it.
Did you mind Chris Charlton? And I want to say he was going a little heel here, but boy, was he taking Red Shoes to
task.
This
is weird.
Yeah, see, and I get it from one aspect of you want to continue on with Will Ospreay feeling as though the world is against him, the referees are against him, the company's against him, and I'm still going to overcome all this stuff. And that's cool. But I don't think it was for Chris Charlton to do right there. And I don't think when a guy is face down and he's taking elbows 12 to 6, and as Kevin Kelly mentioned, you know, he let it go on for too long with Sonata and he ended up with a broken orbital bone. You know, Charlton's best comeback was, yeah, but look how many times he had to do it. Ah, see, when that's your best comeback, maybe somebody else should have been saying that for Will Ospreay.
Yeah, it felt to me like a line. It felt like he was Gino Gambino's avatar there. I get what they're going with Chris Charlton doing that. My fear is that they're going to lean in really heavily to Shota Umino being Red Shoes Uno's son, and a lot of the stuff when he comes back from excursion is going to play around that. I don't want that or need that at all. I don't need referees as characters or even as plot devices in a company like New Japan. What I'm hoping this will lead to, that why they lean so heavily into this, is that it will then lead to Shota Umino recusing himself from refereeing any matches, or Red Shoes Uno, I should say, recusing himself from refereeing any Shota Umino matches, and then we move on from there. I'm a little concerned that that's not going to be the case, because usually when Chris Charlton goes in really hard and really heavy-handed on an idea or a potential story, that usually is a tell that that is actually going to happen and we're going to go down that road. So we'll see. I thought, as far as the match itself, and granted, it's always the caveat of everyone always looks better in there with Will Ospreay than they do with anyone else. I thought this was one of the most impressive performances, if not the most impressive performance from a singles match perspective, of Shota Umino's excursion so far. I thought it was also noteworthy that he seems to be getting into leaner shape. You know, he bulked up to have more of that heavyweight look, which in some ways almost gave him more of like this weird stumpy look, because he's got short arms. It kind of had a strange look, and he kind of lost a little bit of his speed as well. He now seems to be more back at the size that he was right before he left as a young lion going on excursion. And that seemed to really, really benefit him in this match, keeping up with Ospreay. I definitely think he looks closer than ever before to being ready to come back and be, if not a main eventer, because I don't necessarily see that in his future. But I think he certainly looks to project to a Goto level guy, at least when he heads back.
I agree 100%. And we'll see how much of the Ospreay mirror, you know, reflected nicely on Umino when it is somebody other than Ospreay in a high profile situation. And, you know, I have concern with what you said too, Adam, because look at every other promotion in the world that does something like this. Once they start, they do lean in on it too much. And to me, and you'll understand this, if Kevin Kelly's listening, he'll understand this. You can obviously down the line make sure that, and look, people can know that Umino is Red Shoes' son, of course. But Tommy Gilbert, Eddie Gilbert, you know what I mean? Mid-South, UWF. Tommy Gilbert was a referee. Eddie Gilbert was a heel. Eddie Gilbert was an annoying heel. But they kept them apart. Everybody knew they were father and son, but it would only be the off chance in the off case where they would reference that for whatever reason, like when Bill Watts got laid out under the flag. Okay, that would be the time to do something like that, because something happens, or you're actually going to do an angle where Red Shoes gets beat up and, oh God, slaughtered by House of Torture. And then, you know, I know. And then you need Amino to come, you know, obviously to defend his father and all that. So, yeah, you can do a storyline down the line, but I agree 100% with you. It certainly doesn't need to be beaten over the head, and it certainly doesn't need to be, in my opinion, anytime soon.
No, the last thing that Shota Umino needs as far as his character is to be the referee's kid. Like, that's not... You can play off that as a young lion, but I really,
Yes, because he bucks that already because of the Moxley affiliation, because of all that stuff, how he's been seen on New Japan Strong again, how much people in Japan actually watch that show, I don't know, but there's just no reason. And the thing, he's another one where when he comes back, if you're not going to bring him back, he doesn't have to be at the top of the card, but if he's in a Goto position where he comes back against an established guy, say at the Dome or whenever, and he beats that guy, and then he's in the mid card, but in the mix of things, no complaints out of me, but you've got to bring him back with some force.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. The main event of this show, which everyone's been talking about for several weeks and in the last few days has actually had a chance to watch it, Cash Wheeler, Dax Harwood, FTR, defend the IWGP heavyweight title tag titles against the New Japan Strong Openweight Tag Team Champions, Aussie Open, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis. A lot has been said about this match. A lot was said before anyone got to see it. My take on this is that this was great. I thought this was nowhere near the Briscoes matches, particularly the first FTR Briscoes match. Watching it, I also thought that if I was there live, this is the type of match that would feel like the best match I ever saw live. Watching it here, knowing the result already, and just not being in the cauldron of just the crazy atmosphere, the crowd cheering, going nuts. Again, I thought it was great. I hate nitpicking about matches, so I'm not complaining. This was awesome. I want to reiterate it again. This was great. And I really like Aussie Open. But I also feel like sometimes in these type of matches, I feel like it's been noticeable as well in some of their matches on Strong, they really kind of rush through a lot of their biggest stuff, to where some of it just doesn't really register. I know part of that is that's just the style right now, but for whatever reason, I feel that even more when I'm watching them than I'm watching other people. And it's fine. They're still young in their careers. They've improved dramatically. I always go back to when I saw them live for the first time at WrestleMania weekend 2019 at a Rev Pro show, and I heard all the hype about them, and then I saw them, and I was like, oh, they're just okay. They've improved so much from that point, but I don't think they're anywhere near at the level of the Briscoes yet as a tag team. And I feel like that was somewhat apparent if you compare the two matches. While again saying once more, as I've said 15 times in the last minute, this was great.
Did you see the Aussie Open's facing the Briscoes?
Yeah, I saw right before we started recording, I saw that there was a promo from the Briscoes. That's not happening on the New Japan show. Is that happening at an indie show of some sort?
House of Glory. I'm not sure who are the tag team champions. I think maybe the Briscoes are, and I got to see the date. I don't know. You know, I would assume. I shouldn't assume anything, so I don't know if it's the same weekend or not, but yeah, Aussie Open in the Briscoes, so we're going to, you know, a compare and contrast, this is a really good time to do it if you have the money to watch that show or have the ability to watch that show, because I agree with you 100% on sometimes Aussie Open, again, it's like you're in 1.25 speed here, 1.25 speed, turn it
like
back.
Listening to a podcast a little bit fast.
Yeah, like, you know, if you dial it back to 3/4 a little bit, and I thought that's why their match with FTR was so great, because again, FTR is setting the pace there, and I loved this match. The problem was you knew it wasn't being taped, or at least it was not going to air live. It was not going to air anytime soon. So you're having a tag team championship match that odds are FTR ain't losing, especially because it's their first defense. It's taking place in England. Like, all of these things were going against it. So like you, I think if I was there, by the end of it, I would think, you know, I probably would have built myself into enough of a frenzy where I could convince myself that Fletcher and Davis are somehow going to get the victory here.
Oh, 100%. The way the match built, and if you're in that crowd, there's no way you're not getting swept up in some of those near falls, even though going into the match, for all the reasons you said, I would have walked in that building saying zero chance of FTR losing. I could place myself in that scene pretty well and say I would have been losing my mind thinking, you know, buying those near falls. But watching it back, it's impossible to have that same experience, which makes it really hard. You know, I just said, well, it's not as good as the Briscoes match. But it's also, again, it's hard to compare because this is something that we watched on tape 2 weeks later after 2 weeks of hype versus a match that was on live pay-per-view that you didn't know the result and it felt like the result was in doubt.
You're exactly right. And the match, FTR is, somebody on Twitter today, who's your favorite tag team? Who, you know, the Young Bucks or FTR? So I responded the only way that I should, which was, of course, the Usos, to get out of that conversation. But
I'll say FTR for sure. I don't need to get out of that conversation.
But look, somebody was trying to bait me, and I know what they were doing there with that one. But
on the internet? On Twitter? Yet. With you? No.
It's almost like I work for Brian Last and Brian Alvarez. So, boy, I get it from both goddamn sides. But anyway, you know, FTR does everything so perfectly, so well. They are the best tag team in the world, and they do little things better than anybody else. Kevin Kelly pointed out a couple of things that they did that teams don't do anymore. And sometimes, that's not true. Teams do try to do those things. They just don't do them very well. They do them in a way that comes off as, basically, we watched the Hart Foundation against Tully and Arn, and we're going to copy everything. Well, FTR
does. It comes
does
off as pantomiming. I recall, I feel like we've used this, or I've brought this up several times. Do you remember when CM Punk debuted like off TV in WWE? I think it might have actually been like when they did the very, very short-lived dark match thing where they had him and, God, who was it? Where it was almost like a biker gimmick, and one of the women of the company was his, Mickey James was his valet. Like, this didn't last long at all, if I'm remembering correctly, but the story was that CM Punk came backstage after the match, and Michael Hayes told him that you look like you're playing a wrestler instead of being a pro wrestler, and your mileage may vary in terms of what you think of Michael Hayes giving that advice to CM Punk in 2005, 2006, 2007, whatever it was, but still, that always rings in my ears when I see something like what you're describing, where it's guys thinking they're doing something well, but really not knowing why they're doing it or how to do it. A lot of times guys can't pull that stuff off anywhere near as well as FTR does.
Oh, yeah. And if you watch old FTR matches, in hindsight, they're doing that because that's how you learn 100%. As a wrestler and everything. It's just they have now gotten the confidence now between fans, management, their peers. You know, I don't know how high they're floating, but in their wrestling world, they should be feeling themselves to the nth degree. You know, they are fantastic and they know it, and they have the confidence to go in these matches and now use those tricks and apply them as part of their match as opposed to paying homage to another match. And they're able to lead other teams around doing those spots and making them feel like their own. So, like I said,
there was one moment that I want to point out that exactly what you said. It was relatively, maybe it was early to halfway in the match, and Kyle Fletcher, they had Cash Wheeler down. Kyle Fletcher went running into the corner to knock Dax Harwood off, and it looked for sure like Kyle Fletcher thought that Dax Harwood would be there to knock him, you know, to knock Dax Harwood off legitimately. Dax instead hops off the apron, goes to the floor, pulls Kyle Fletcher out, and then Fletcher reverses the Irish whip into the guardrail on the floor. And it was so much better of a spot than if they had just done the knock off the apron spot. They accomplished the same thing, but they did it with just enough different wrinkle that it added to the match. I'm sorry for jumping in. It stuck out to me when I watched it. And then when you just said that now, it was such a perfect example of exactly what you pointed out.
Yes, it was those sorts of things. And even you know, Fletcher and Davis, I don't want to say this is the best I've ever seen them look, but this is the best tag team match I've ever seen them have, because they were in there with FTR and it was so damn good. But their timing, and again, I'm sure FTR led them by the nose in parts of this match here. I know Aussie Open played the heels here, but they didn't call this match. There's no way. And if they did, more kudos to them, but there's no way they did. But the timing of them going over to pull Dax off the ropes, as because Cash Wheeler sold basically the entire match, desperate to try to get to those ropes, and they would get flung off of it. Just little things throughout the entire match, it made it outstanding. Now I have one nitpick that I can't help but do, and I don't know who's at fault. I don't know if it was Uno. I don't know if it was a factor of time. I don't. But there was a spot where Wheeler had Davis rolled up and Red Shoes is making the pin, and then Dax does his slingshot powerbomb onto Fletcher, and then there's a double count. The problem is when Wheeler had Davis down, one, two,
yes,
and then stopped and then counted both. And that is where, if you want to say you want to throw a demerit at FTR's way, Cash should have probably started going after the ref, like, what is going on? Just even to play it off, to do something, because I don't want to say it stuck out like a sore thumb, but it did.
No, it did.
It did.
By the end of the match, you're not thinking about it, but in the moment, you're thinking, yeah, why is he not counting this one pin down, particularly when those are the legal guys, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, no, that's a good pull, a good call on your part. But outside of those very small nitpicks that I think each of us had, fantastic match that if you are a subscriber to New Japan World and you haven't watched this because you heard all the buzz and then 2 weeks went by and you're like, oh, there's so much other wrestling, I'll just move on. Don't move on from this. Watch it. You will not be disappointed. I don't think there's really anywhere near as much stuff that I wanted to talk about on the show on the second, the following night. The one thing that I did want to go into a little bit of detail on, or at least touch on, is the Tomohiro Ishii Yota Tsuji match, with Yota Tsuji replacing Jonah, who was unable to travel due to the hurricane going on at that time, as he lives in Florida. This was good. This was also, there are a few things on this show where this crowd was such a great crowd that they almost reacted better to things than they should have. Like, this was very good, but I, for all the talk of how great Yota Tsuji has looked on his excursion in the UK, and he's looked very good in some of his matches, I didn't think this was a particularly great night for Yota Tsuji. And I thought Kevin Kelly, in his own way, kind of low-key said that, you know, when he said that, you know, Tsuji looked good, but they still need some more time in the oven. He still needs to bake a little bit more. He's figuring it out. He's figuring out his moveset. He did a crazy dive. But if he's going to throw kicks, if he's going to strike, if he's going to do that sort of high-impact physical offense, he has to do it with more aggression. He has to do it with more intensity. There has to be more follow-through on the strikes, because he's in there with Tomohiro Ishii, who's throwing. And Tsuji, the stuff he's throwing back did not look very heavy. It did not look – it just looked kind of loose all around. And so, yeah, I don't think he's anywhere near the level of Uemura – of a Gabriel Kidd at this point, which you kind of think of those guys as his generational rivals. And so just something to kind of put a pin on, and you know, be on the lookout for when we see big Tsuji matches going forward during his excursion.
I thought Naito and Zack Sabre Jr. was good. I did end up seeing that. Unfortunately, I didn't see the undercard, you know, and there's not really much to say about it. Again, this was another one of those matches where, you know, if you do some sort of banana peel or sleight of hand, you know, I don't want to see that. But with that said, the result was never in doubt here, but it was a very strong match. The one match that I'm not sure if you saw that I wanted to ask you about was Jazzy Gabert and Ava White. Because Ava White, when I saw her, she looked like somebody that Stardom would take. But when you look at all the other female talent that was over there, it surprised me. Jazzy Gabert, that made sense to me. She's from Germany. There's lots of, again, she's had a history with Stardom. She's very unique. The fighting background in Japan. There's lots of reasons why it made sense, even though I don't necessarily pine to see her, why she made sense. So Gabriel White as a match and Ava White as a wrestler, is she somebody that Stardom, you could see in Stardom in the future? And what did you think?
All I'll say is hopefully not anytime soon. And I'm sure she tried hard. She clearly was trying hard. She, meaning Ava White, was way, 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 way out of her league being on this show. This was, I would not describe it as a good performance. If I was in a company that had a lot of high-end wrestlers and was looking to bring somebody in from the outside, a foreigner, she would not be at the top of my list. I don't know a ton about her history in terms of how long she's been wrestling, where she was trained, any sort of that. We've seen wrestlers before that looked not very good at all. Even in Stardom, we've seen that. And then they, you know, they're in there with a lot of good wrestlers constantly, and they become competent and maybe even become good. I have no doubt that someone like her would benefit from being in there with good wrestlers every night, but I don't think she's yet at the level that is even really a legitimate option for a company like Stardom. So we'll see. Maybe she'll get there, but yeah, I don't think she was anywhere near there at this point, unfortunately.
You know, Laura DiMatteo lost the Progress women's title in late August, and she's wrestled for Eve, and she's been to Japan before, I may be hallucinating there, but like, there were so many other women that I would have figured would have been there, but again, I don't know why or what the reasoning was or anything like that, but I was very curious, because obviously that match was not in doubt either, with Gabert obviously starting a stable, and they're planning on doing something around her coming around, even if it's only for a short period of time while the tournament is taking place, but they obviously have a little bit of plans for her, so that was, again, another match where it didn't seem like the result was ever in doubt.
No, and the crowd was very kind, I'll say, at certain parts of the match. Just, again, maybe she'll get there, but just a lot of stumble step stuff, just not precise in moves or strikes, using the same three or four not very good-looking strikes over and over again. So it happens. Who knows? Maybe it was just an off night. Maybe they're, you know, down the line a year or two from now, that'll be, you know, look back and say, wow, Ava White's gotten so much better. She's great. You know, that could happen. So yeah, we'll see. But it definitely was not there on that night. What that does take us to, though, Mike, is talking about Stardom. And we'll talk a little bit about the New Blood show, which just happened today and is still available for free on YouTube. It was live streamed on YouTube, as all the New Blood shows are, on the Stardom YouTube channel, and then stays up as video on demand. But really the most pressing thing in Stardom right now is that IWGP World Heavyweight Women's World Title Tournament is really getting underway in earnest in Japan, starting really in a couple of days on the 22nd at Korakuen Hall, as we have Itami Hayashishida versus Himeka and Mayu Iwatani versus Momo Watanabe, both taking place on that show, then leading into the big Stardom pay-per-view coming up on the 23rd as well.
Not too bad of a start there with those two matches, eh?
Yeah. No, I'll definitely, we'll definitely take it for sure. And we should note that Stardom is posted on the We Are Stardom Twitter account, their English language Twitter account, that both of these IWGP Women's Championship first round matches that we just mentioned, Mayu Iwatani versus Momo Watanabe and Utami Hayashishida versus Himeka, will be posted by Saturday night on Stardom World ahead of Sunday's Stardom pay-per-view and round two of the tournament.
Good, because for somebody like me who's caring about this in real time, that matters.
Yeah, I was actually, it's funny because I was thinking the same thing, like, right before that post went up. So very, very glad to hear about that. But yeah, just any thoughts on, I guess, on where we're at with the IWGP Women's Tournament? Because we also have on the other side of the bracket coming up with Jazzy Gabert and Kairi.
Well, yeah, first and foremost, The wrestling news might be a little bit late on the 22nd, depending on when this show ends. If I can get it done by about 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, if it's over by then, you'll have those results. So we love you, Puro Love, but we want them to come to me first now. But I look, Tommy and Mayu would be the way I would go with this, you know? And then, look, do you want to even cross Sasha Banks putting up on Instagram her face filled in next to Kyrie for the other half of the women's bracket? Do you even want to bother with that?
I mean, it's intriguing as hell. I mean, we know she likes to stir the pot. I mean, she also has traveled to Japan before. We all saw those pictures of her training at the Sendai gym. So we know that she has interest there, but I think it's just sort of those, you know, watch this space sort of things. I mean, I certainly would love to see it happen. As far as the tournament proper, to me, you know, it's Kairi against Hayashishita or Iwatani, and then I would assume Kairi wins, and then her first defense, maybe at the Tokyo Dome, would be against whichever one that isn't. You know, maybe it's Kairi defeating Hayashishita in the final, and then it's Kairi against Mayu Iwatani at Wrestle Kingdom.
And you know what? In some cosmic way, that's probably the most fitting and fair thing for Stardom. And you know what I mean? To me, like with Mayu, she probably should be at the Tokyo Dome in that match against Kairi. And
particularly with the movie coming as well. You can't.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't not factor that in. And maybe it's a situation where Kairi wins the tournament and then loses the title at the Tokyo Dome to Mayu Iwatani. You know, if we're looking at 2023 as a big Mayu year heading into the feature length film that's being made, who knows, maybe with Momo Kogo playing her, it's going to be a big year, I think, for Iwatani. And so, yeah, Tokyo Dome certainly makes sense.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I could see that scenario laid out there perfectly. You know, I think, again, unless she's trying to hit the States for a couple of months before things crank up for the movie or something like that, and she wants to, you know, a travel, you know, vacation slash, you know, working excursion, you know, she could win the title and come over and go to Rev Pro or go to AEW or go to New Japan Strong tapings and defend that title, since that's what it's going to be for, you know. But other than that, obviously, to me, it just, you know, that title screams for Kairi, or it screams for somebody down the line, Hayashishita, Julia, whoever, that you want to showcase or establish in Great Britain or the United States, where they can come over and go.
Saya Kamatani, maybe.
Exactly, exactly. So, again, these are big names for everybody listening to us, but for the most part, they don't know these women. And I had a conversation with somebody as it relates to the Pro Wrestling Illustrated 500, and we were kind of talking about it, and it's amazing. Even people that are in the know who cover wrestling regularly, they don't know the impact Stardom has as far as some fans go, as far as women's wrestling fans go, and how good some of these women are, because there's just not time to be tuned in. And there are other people that were like, you know, kind of like going nuts about how can you not? And it was a battle kind of over the top 150 rating that they do. But it was interesting to hear kind of some of the back and forth, and the fact that these women, for right or wrong, no matter what anybody out there believes, many of them are not established here. And as I will always say, go ahead and put Julia. And look, I think the mixed tag matches are going to go very far that way. I think the New Japan exposure on shows is going to go really far that way. And I just think once people see Mina Shirakawa do her bit, once people see Utami or Siuri or Julia, or once they see the top level women in Stardom, I mean, to me, it's undeniable. You can say you like women American style better, and you could say, look, I think Bianca Belair is this or whatever, but there are few women who are in the peer, and I'll put Bianca and Charlotte and a couple other women up there, but athletically, I mean, they, again, they are, that's the only place they have a peer. As far as the wrestling goes, it's a different story because of different styles. But again, all people have to do, in my opinion, is lay their eyes on some of these women, and it's going to work.
Well, think about, as an example of that, you know, backing up your point, how big of a star Riho is in AEW. Again, just go back to last night. Her comeback got a huge pop. She's going to have a great match with Jamie Hayter next week. The crowds get behind her all the time. And I love Riho. I think she's great. I think she's an awesome wrestler. And I would probably have her maybe in the upper two thirds among the top wrestlers in Stardom. I don't know if that's fair. I don't know if some people would say she deserves to be higher, but I think just your point that if you get, you know, I put Izumi, I put Starlight Kid in that mix as well, Natsupoi, there's probably 15 people in Stardom that if you just, all you had to do is put them in front of an American audience. And if Riho and Hikaru Shida can get over to the level they have, I have no doubt that any of those people from Stardom that we just talked about would get over at least as much, if not maybe a great deal more.
Yeah, and that's what I think, actually, I think it could be, in theory, a great deal more. Again, there's lots of moving parts there, including how you're presented, when and at what time and against who and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, again, things are looking sunny right now for Stardom. And obviously, you know, this IWGP title, you know, it's the women's title. Again, going forward here, we'll just kind of take everything as it goes towards the end of the year. I mean, it's less than a month away before the Hiroshima show that's got Tsuri and Mike on it and Saya and Mina. And it's like, that's coming up fast. I have a feeling
a month away from the Stardom New Japan crossover show. That's insane to me. Like when they mentioned that in passing on the New Japan shows this week, I'm like, holy shit, that's a month away. That it felt like it was years away not that long ago, and it's already here. So yeah, there's some huge stuff. I mean, you've got that. You've got Julia and Shuri most likely for the title at the end of the year. There's a lot.
You got the tag league that's, you know, the tag tournament that's going on. And plus, when you include that stuff with, again, it'll be, not that any of us are really looking all that forward to the New Japan Tag and Junior Tag League. The fact that that's going to be going on while we get ready for the Dome, while we get ready for the end of Keiji Muto, while we get ready, like, there is going to be so much stuff chugging here in November and December, plus your holidays and everything else you have going on. It's going to be January 4th before we know it. Or really, I guess really what matters most for us right now, because the New Year's Eve shows don't really mean all that much in the world of professional wrestling, is going to be November 3rd with Stardom. Is probably going to be the next thing we're really looking at.
Yeah, November 3rd with Stardom.
I'm sorry, January 3rd as well, too, as we go through.
Yep, in Yokohama. You know, that week is going to be crazy. You mentioned the tag league, and that's the other part of the Stardom pay-per-view that's taking place this Sunday. We mentioned the semifinals of the IWGP Women's Title Tournament. In addition, the tag league gets going, 5 tag league matches, as I see it listed now here on ParallelLove.com. 2 in the red block, 3 in the blue block. My Fair Lady, the best tag team name of all time. I'll stand by that. Mai Sakurai and Lady C take on Saki Kashima and Fukigen Death. Tam Nakano and Natsupoi, the tag team champions, take on Julia and Thekla. Should be awesome. Mina Shirakawa and Saki against one of the more absurd tag team names of all time, BMI 2000, Natsuko Tora and Ruaka.
That's about my body mass index is at right now is 2000. So
that's
out of 100.
I don't know how I feel about that as a tag team name, but there it is. We also have Izumi and the super rookie Miyu Amasaki taking on Saya Iida and Hanan. And then Hazuki and Koguma against Nanai Takahashi and Yu, the Neo Stardom group that we talked about, along with Jesse Gabert. But it's Nanai Takahashi and Yu here against FWC. So that's the opening night of the tournament. And then there'll be shows on the 30th, November 5th, November 6th, and onward with the tournament. We'll obviously be talking a lot more about that later. Did you get a chance to see the main event from the New Blood show that took place today, by the way?
I did indeed. Yes, I did.
Ami Sore and Hanan for the Future of Stardom title. It kind of felt weird when they set this up, because I know Ami Sore has only been wrestling for a couple years, but when you see her standing in the company so far, teaming with Mirai, opposite Himeka, and sort of hoss fight shoulder block battles and stuff like that. I don't know about you, but I just don't really think about her like being in the future title mix. You kind of think about that for, I don't know. She feels like she's higher in the mix than that belt, but here she challenged Hanan, and I thought this was very, very good. To me, it's not unexpected that Ami Sore won, in that at some point, Hanan was going to, I guess, age out and experience out of the 3 years or under 18 rule set for that title. And as we saw her get a few wins getting towards the end of the five-star Grand Prix, it's time for her to start getting a bit more of a push and start beating some veterans. So, I don't really know what you do with Ami Sore as future champion going forward, but it's fine.
Sure. I didn't even expect her to win, and I don't know why, because as you mentioned, at some point, Hanan was going to have to give that belt up. So why not, I guess. But, Sore and Saya Iida, and I don't know. I would rather see them more in the mix, going after the artist, or what's the tag title?
The goddess tag belt.
Like, obviously not in the mix, but like teaming together to go after those belts. We've just lost a team now with Nagi Sayaka and Mina, and it looks like Mina's going to be, I would assume, be doing more singles stuff. I would rather her do more singles stuff at this point, with the way she's been looking and the fact that people have recognized that and the fact she is getting so much better. So there is a spot for a team, and I guess, this is, of all the titles, that is by far the one I care about the absolute least. And yes, it's just, to me, it's just there. So it's one of those where, cool, but like, if you put it on Lady C or who, their youngest, skinniest type of, fine. I'm okay with that. Like, that's what this whole show was about, where put it on one of the other women, not necessarily Ami Sore, who I don't think needs it. And again, who needs whatever, but like, to me, it just doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. Just sort of more curious as to what you do with Sore with that belt now, after she's, teamed with Mirai, challenging for the tag titles. She's had some big wins. I will say, and we've talked about it a little bit before, her new finisher, the Like a Thunderbolt, which
that's
just
cool.
It is. It's my new favorite finisher in wrestling. It is so devastating, so different. It's in some ways like almost like a one-winged angel meets a cradle shock. It's just nasty, almost a bit like a Fire Thunder Driver as well. But when I see her hit that, I don't want anyone to ever kick out. Like that is a death move. A few other just quick notes on the show. Hina and Lady C teamed up against Suzu and someone named An Chanmu, who I had never seen before. And she was not overly featured in this match, but I thought she looked great for someone who appeared to be young, who's certainly off the radar. Some really good submission stuff, moved well, had a good presence. Really interested to see if we see more of her on the New Blood shows. I can't imagine we wouldn't going forward. Also, the opener, Momo Kogo against the Masked Rhythm from JTO. Really solid opener. I thought Kogo looked very good. I love her wrist clutch fisherman suplex finisher. And Rhythm appears to be, just another in the almost factory, the assembly line at this point, that you could say, of JTO trainees who very quickly turn into very good wrestlers, much like someone who we're seeing a lot more of in Stardom now, including in the tag tournament, Tomoka Inaba, who was teaming with Mirai and Nanami of Marvelous against Starlight Kid, Ruaka, and Haruka Umasaki, who we've seen on these New Blood shows teaming, kind of getting drawn into team with Oedo Tai. Here, she had different gear. She had face paint, and she was Karma, and she was throwing fireballs.
Fireballs now.
Yes.
Is she a wizard?
Fireballs. Like, holding the flash paper out and lighting it up. It was hilarious.
So well.
I loved it. It was so ridiculous that it was great. She used that to blind, to, I guess, the flash of it, not the actual burn, but the flash blinded Nanami. And then she was able to, Karma slash Ruka Umesaki was able to get the win. My Sakurai came out and challenged Karma afterward. I assume that will be on the next New Blood show. And then maybe most notably, Nanami appealed to become a part of God's Eye, just like Tomoka Inaba did recently. And apparently, Shuri accepted the appeal. And Nanami, who I didn't realize, we've seen her on a few shows, particularly these New Blood shows. She's only 16 years old, which for that age, she's very good already, even though she's still a little bit green. But she has apparently joined God's Eye. I don't expect this to mean that she's joining Stardom full time. You know, there's a very friendly relationship between Stardom and Marvelous. I would imagine she'd continue to do Marvelous stuff, but it sounds and appears clearly like she's going to be somewhat incorporated into Stardom going forward. So that's another talented young wrestler in this ever busy mix.
It's incredible. It's really incredible. And the fact that, again, there are so many young women there too, which, again, you know, at 19, 20, 21, 22, when you've been wrestling for 5-6 years, you know, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And, you know, obviously that's God, I wish that the whole thing, and I know it doesn't really matter because Sorhei and Ida tagged earlier on this year, but Ida's obviously in Stars. So you can't, you know,
no, it would be a fun team. I like your idea, and particularly if Mirai at some point, it sure as hell seems like she's going to be a big time singles player. If she ends up winning a singles title, I don't know how you handle the faction affiliations, but those two is just a power team wreck and shop. I would have no problem with that at all.
Yeah. And again, if Mirai and Sorhei want to keep teaming, that's fine too. No complaints out of me.
Absolutely. Trying to think of anything else before we round the show out. I mean, we've got some big stuff coming up this week. I mean, we mentioned New Japan, we mentioned Stardom. DDT also has coming up this weekend a match that should be fantastic for the KOD title. That being Kazusada Higuchi coming off of that incredible match with Konosuke Takeshita, I believe about a month or so ago. He's defending, Higuchi is, against his longtime tag team partner, Yukio Sakaguchi. That should be great.
There's that. I'm trying to think of what else. Really, there's nothing going on in NOAH, although we did have Muda's end at Fukuoka and Ninja Mac, who is on a losing streak going into the big show that they have coming up. But that big show is not going to happen until October 30th. So we still got some time there. They're still going along on their Demolition stage tour. Other than that, does All Japan have a show, I thought, coming up here? I could be hallucinating this, and that may also be the end of October as well, but on their
Got coming up, I think that might actually be this weekend. Let me check as we do some on-air research here, but I think that might actually also be this Sunday, if my memory is correct, with
Aoyagi and Minoru.
Yeah, yes, exactly, for the junior title, and with Kento Miyahara defending the Triple Crown against Takao Omori, calling back to the fact that Omori is, you know, a disciple of Baba, this in the 50th year anniversary. Miyahara also calling out that Omori should bring some people from the past, some familiar names from the past, to be involved. But yes, that is, in fact, that show, the 22nd, is the show with Miyahara versus Omori. Let me see if I can find what the date is on the junior title match. So the junior title match is coming up. That's the 23rd. So the 22nd, that's this Saturday, has the Triple Crown match that I just mentioned, and then the show at the smaller Edian Arena on Sunday has Atsuki Aoyagi versus Minoru for the World Junior title, which should be really, really good. And it's be interesting to see if it can carry off the momentum of what Aoyagi had in the match with Rising Hayato. And I guess also we'll see if this will be a main event, if it will be the main event, much like that match was, if they're kind of going forward with the idea of trying to create, you know, a true junior heavyweight draw in Atsuki Aoyagi.
We have never covered a young Takao Mori. By the time we started doing this show, this man was already in his mid-30s.
Yes.
And if you would have told me he'd still be going right now, I would have called you a liar. I really would have. I'll be
100%. He did have, I mean, he still is capable of having good matches.
Yes.
When the time calls for. I mean, he's definitely older. He's a little heavier. He's kind of lumpy. But when he needs to, he can still pull out a really good match. I mean, that tag title match at the 50th anniversary show for All Japan just whatever, a month or two ago, with he and Manabu Soya reprising their Get Wild tag team against Shotaro Ashino and Ryuki Honda was awesome. It might have been the best match on that show. So I hold out hope, and I think there's a good chance here that we will see a strong performance here from Takao Omori, even though the result is 100% not in doubt here for his 30th anniversary special match.
You know, the last time we were doing ads on this show, Matt Murphy probably had something to say in his book about Takao Mori. I don't know that, but you remember those Matt Murphy's the commercials? Matt Murphy
How could
says.
I ever forget them? I feel like I still hear them even in my sleep. That is a great callback. Let me just check here our Twitter to see if we have any other questions that came in. Had several people wanting us to talk about the Carl Anderson New Japan Never Open Weight title situation. We got into that in some detail. We have Mark Ludwizak. I apologize, Mark, if I did not pronounce your name correctly, at Mark Lud 12. He was asking if he says he's way behind on everything, is wondering if there's any recommendations from the 5-star Grand Prix outside of the pay-per-view shows. That would be helpful. I can't say, Mark, that I have that list in front of me right now. It's simply too long. But what I will do is I will reply to you on Twitter. And Mike, obviously, feel free to as well with some of the matches that we enjoyed. They were a bit off the beaten path in that tournament because there were several. I would say the Izumi Himeka match is one that I talked about at length on this show several episodes ago as one just great 8-minute match that stood out. But we'll throw some other recommendations your way as well, Mark.
Yes, I have to see, because the way my brain works now, which is not well, I need to see a list of what was actually on pay-per-view and not, because, I mean, we saw every match.
Every match like the
G1. I'd have to actually go and give you dates and some more specifics on that as far as the matches go.
2 months of tournament also.
Yeah.
So it's even more difficult, but we will I'll definitely post that. And obviously, Mark can take a look at that. Everyone else listening, check that out as well, because you'll find some true hidden gems that just because the sheer volume of wrestling, not only in that tournament, but in the other tournaments that were happening in Japan at that same time, there are some great matches that fell through the cracks and are worth a watch or a rewatch. Also, Jamie Matthews, a longtime listener at Crazy Max 46. Thoughts on MVPs for Stardom, both in-ring and front office-wise? I mean, the obvious front office MVP is Rossi Ogawa and the magic he continues to weave, both in terms of matchmaking and the nearly perfect batting 1,000 record that he has in terms of who they bring in from outside. As far as an in-ring MVP, there have been so many this year. I think a lot of people would be tempted to say, since she's been champion, it would be Shuri. I would go a little bit different direction, and I know I'm in the tank for Tam Nakano, so that is one. I would say, even though she hasn't necessarily been overly featured this year, I think Utami Hayashishita falls into that category just for her range as a singles wrestler, a tag team wrestler, being able to show a little bit of comedy, as we mentioned, with her interactions with Tam Nakano. But if I had to pick one MVP, Mike, for this year, and someone who's raised their stock and risen to the occasion time and time again, I would go with Saya Kamatani.
You, boy, I tell you, You know, you talk about, you said the front office, you know, want to tie into the stardom. How about this one? If Suzu Suzuki was in a match, whether it was on pay-per-view or not, watch the match, okay? That's flat out. Rossi Ogawa should probably be the booker of the year as it relates to, as far as just picking an award, the way that the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Award is. To me, it would be Rossi Ogawa. There's other people in that office, obviously, that are doing work as well, too. But you know how it works on sports teams. The GM, the manager, they're going to get the most shine. And so he gets the most shine for sure when it comes to the front office. When it comes to the MVP, I can sit here and state a case for Julia and of why she's the most valuable person to that promotion, why she's the most balanced, why she, you know, is the complete package. I would probably personally say Julia, but I think if I was being fair about it, I'd probably say Utami, to be honest with you, still continuing to be, in some ways, the most valuable, best thing that they have there. Again, you're not going to go wrong with Saya. You're not going to go wrong with Shuri or Tam or anybody, you know, in that little mix there. But to me, I would say it's probably Utami or Julia for sure. And I think, to be fair, I'll go ahead and put Utami on that up atop.
Yeah, and I think the fact that we were just able to name all those people, and then also, you know, don't forget, what was she voted as, like, the sixth most popular, ninth most popular wrestler in all of Japan? I don't think you can leave Starlight Kid off that list either. The fact that there's probably 10 people that we could legitimately put as the kind of the lead person this year in Stardom says everything about the strength of the company going forward. So I think that wraps up the, you know, the last minute questions or comments that we had in on Twitter. Is there anything else you want to talk about, Mike, or do you want to wrap this thing up, tell the good people where else they can hear us and read us?
Nah, you know, we'll leave a little bit for the next time around. There's always something we can talk about here on the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. That's why these shows in the past have gone to 2.5, 3 hours, 17 hours long, in fact, but we are trying to cut down a little bit on that, only 90 minutes or so this time. But if you want a little bit more of me anyway, you could do so every single day on Wrestling Observer Live, myself and Brian Alvarez, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, replays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 Pacific, or you could just become a member at F4WOnline.com and listen to that show whenever you want, because it's there for download, just like this show is, except you get this show for free the same way that you get the wrestling news for free. You like how I did it? The wrestling news. I did it once. Now I have to. Jess makes fun of me all the time for it. It's like, what are you doing? Well, I got to go record. Oh, you doing the wrestling news? Like, bitch, shut up. Like,
what we need is Lou Kippelman to read our hype things at the end of this show.
I could get him to do it too. I love Lou to pieces, and thank God he is there to spare me on some of those stories every single day for free, 7 days a week, usually by about 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning Eastern Time. We are going to have your wrestling daily news report to you between 7 and 20 minutes every day, depending on how much news is taking place. But we cover the entire globe. Obviously, WWE, AEW, usually first and foremost. But Triple Mania happens, we're talking about that. CMLL happens, we're talking about that. Big Stardom show, New Japan show, doesn't matter where in the world it is, we're going to report back to you so you know all of the news that you need to know to get your day started, or, you know, because you're on break. You know, it's at 1 o'clock, at 8 o'clock in the morning here in the States, 1 o'clock in the UK, you're trying to get out of work, you're trying to smoke a cigarette, you're trying to get something to eat, trying to get away from the boss. Hey, we got you covered, brother. We are, and sisters, both of you, and inanimate objects, all of you, and it's the wrestling news. So there's that, and the Black Wrestling Podcast, too. If you're on Black Wrestling, Black Wrestling's Patreon, blackwrestling.com, if you ever saw my Kamala hat, you ever saw the slick sweatshirt or any of that sort of stuff, those are the guys that have been putting it down, and myself and Vin Forte do Bulls in the China Shop for the Patreon over at blackwrestling.com. Trust me, pay the dollar. We'd love for you to pay 10, but pay the dollar for that show, and you will greatly enjoy it, some of the stuff that we do on there. Oh, yeah, and at some point I will be coming to a decision and offering a decision on the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, which will still be going on in some form. I'm just not exactly sure how yet. So that's enough. I apologize for taking up all the time.
No problem. You mentioned Mid-Atlantic, and that actually relates to this week's episode that will be going up on Sunday of the other podcast I do, Wrestling at Random, with my close, longtime personal friend, Jeremy Deamer, where a bit of a preview, the people on Twitter won't know this until tomorrow, but we will be reviewing an episode of NWA Worldwide from 1984, which is firmly entrenched in the Mid-Atlantic territory. There is more number one Paul Jones than anyone could ever want or need in their life. So you'll get all of that on that show, as well as Dusty Rhodes and Nikita Koloff in an arm wrestling battle. That is a sight to behold. If you follow at Wrestle at Random on Twitter tomorrow, you'll see an incredible GIF. I think it may be the best GIF poll I've done in four seasons of Wrestling at Random. That show is, as the name implies, randomly selected wrestling shows, whether it be a randomly selected episode of weekly television from a territory, pay-per-views, Clash of the Champions, Saturday night's main event. It's all thrown in there. We have no idea what it's going to pull. It pulls it. We watch it. We review it. You can listen to it at the same place that most likely you're listening to this podcast right now, if you just search out Wrestling at Random. And then we also have the bonus feed for Wrestling at Random, where we do even more shows for our Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom. And coming up this week, it is two matches from New Japan Pro Wrestling in 1983 from the MSG Tag League. It is Hulk Hogan and Antonio Inoki against Akira Maeda and Tatsumi Fujinami. And then we also have Dick Murdoch and Adrian Adonis against the team of Animal Hamaguchi and Ricky Choshu. So that's just an example of, it's an interesting watch on several levels when you think about the direction that really all those men's career would go in the next year. You look at shortly after this, we see everything that happens with Maeda and UWF. We have Choshu going to All Japan, sort of the sad trajectory of the career and life of Adrian Adonis going forward from here. Dick Murdoch does a kip up in that match. So much goodness. So you can check that out if you really want to support our podcast, Wrestling at Random, patreon.com/wrestlingatrandom. And then I promise this is maybe the only longest running storyline other than Bob Orton and the cast on his wrist. I am working on a new edition of the Three Count Fall newsletter. I guess what will there be clarity on first? Which will come first, a new edition of the Mid-Atlantic Pod or a new edition of the Three Count Fall newsletter? I'm working on it. Three Count Fall is coming. AdamSummers.substack.com. I appreciate your patience, and I appreciate the new subscribers that keep coming in. I feel like we, after these episodes, even without new issues coming each time, I still get a few new subscribers. So have new content for you there soon, I promise. That's it. That's all I got to say.
God, you know, not only does that Murdoch Adonis match feed your podcast, and it also feeds the head if you're a wrestling fan. It was such a short period of time that Adonis and Murdoch were together. And, you know, there's them against the Briscoes in WWF. There is them against Wyndham and Rotunda, but there's not a lot. I think it's them and the Samoans, but there's not a lot out there. So anytime you can see them team up, especially against Hamaguchi and Choshu, like, yeah, you know, follow along, listen to the show, watch the matches. And, you know, for everybody out there that watched some of the Inoki matches and some of that stuff, I heard some feedback back off of that show. Much appreciated. You know, I'm glad you were able to bring some of this stuff to light. Same thing with Kitamura. Some of the people that went back and only, you know, remember seeing that big dude, or, you know, and then going back and seeing some of the stuff that he did in the tag matches in the short period of time he was wrestling, you know, it's kind of cool. So I'm glad some of these things that we offer out to you, you guys can jump on and bite. And, you know, Adam, 36 years ago this week, Magnum T.A. in the car accident that ultimately ended his career, and on the same television show that David Crockett had to very emotionally announce that, it was also the same episode that Dusty was attacked in the parking lot and looked up there at Ole and Arn and Tully and JJ, all of them who had bats and weapons in hand, and said, make it good.
Crazy thing is, I actually just watched both those segments on YouTube yesterday on a lark, not even realizing that it was the anniversary.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's why you should follow at Mid-Atlantic Pod, because no matter what happens to the podcast, I'm going to fill up that Twitter every single day because
That's where it was. Of course, it was on that Twitter account. It was not on YouTube randomly. It was on that Twitter account. Yes, that is probably my favorite feed to follow. So make sure you follow at Mid-Atlantic Pod. And make sure you follow us to ending this podcast for today, because I have no more words. I'm done. I'm out.
Absolutely. At Admin Mike. I'm sorry. At Adam B-A-N. No, with shit.
At Adam of the Ban. At Adam of the B-A-N on Twitter, and at Semper Vivi. That's where you can get me and Mike, and we'll be more coherent than we are at the last few minutes of this podcast. We've officially reached Bugatti Nightmare status here at the end of the show.
I don't know. I make no promises, but good night, everybody.